This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities. Anyone who's had a bad boss or a coworker has probably felt the sting of having their hard work stolen. They spend all weekend on a report or a spreadsheet only to have the credit go to someone else. Back in the 1970s, five women did a job that nobody else would or could do, and their research led to some pretty incredible results. Results that were ultimately attributed to the men of their field. But Alina Schmontz, Anne Hartline, Dr. Sylvia Earle Mead, Dr. Renata True, and Peggy Lucas Bond did more for the United States space program than we will ever know. In 1970, both NASA and the U.S. Department of the Interior put out a call. They were looking for scientists to head up the next initiative at a special facility called Tektite 2. Tektite 2 was a special kind of base comprised of two metal capsules measuring 18 feet tall and connected by a narrow passage. The capsules held a small kitchen with a refrigerator, a microwave, a small table, and a bathroom, as well as bunks and a laboratory. Tektite 2 had been used four times previously by other teams of five, with four scientists and one engineer on each mission. The goal was to study how scientific teams work together when isolated in small spaces, similar to what they experienced while in space. And for this new experiment, NASA and the U.S. government wanted five women, as the first four experiments had been conducted by all male teams. But Tektite 2 wasn't located in the middle of the desert, or even in a top-secret underground facility. It was located 43 feet under the Atlantic Ocean in the Virgin Islands. Several of the women were graduate students at Scripps Institution of Oceanography, while Dr. True taught biological oceanography at Tulane University in New Orleans. Peggy Lucas Bond came from Villanueva as an electrical engineer. The men who had done the previous Tektite missions ate frozen dinners every night and had regular contact with the outside world. They weren't so much isolated as they were on vacation, but Schmontz and the other women of Mission 650 wouldn't be so lucky. They would live and work together in close quarters for 14 days, studying the behavior of small coral reef fish while NASA and the DOI studied them. The women were deep enough that they could not surface without getting the bends. NASA had built a facility that could not be escaped so as to better study the psychological effects of being down there for longer periods of time. Once they were selected, the media had a field day with the fact that five young, attractive women were going to be doing what was considered men's work. Articles and TV reports discussed everything from their heights and weights to how they had allegedly requested a hairdryer in the capsule, which, by the way, they hadn't. And the men in charge of the program also bombarded them with sexist remarks and behaviors, an unfortunate but not unexpected consequence of doing their jobs in a man's world. For example, the higher-ups didn't think the women would be able to lift or maneuver their breathing tanks without a man there to help them. Mission 650 was led by Sylvia Earle Mead, while Bond maintained the life support systems. The five of them often explored the nearby coral reefs two at a time, with one person staying back at the base. They also got to use rebreathers on their excursions, a new technology that let the women breathe their own air using special tanks, allowing them to stay out of the base for hours on end. When they weren't observing the sea life outside of Tektite 2, they relaxed inside, observing the sea life through the station's bubble-shaped windows. There was also a television and radio on board in case they wanted to entertain themselves with something other than fish. Anne Hartline was quoted in the New York Times article saying, "There was no claustrophobia, and we got along unbelievably well. The only time we had any disagreement was when we all wanted to go out swimming at the same time. After it was over, Smonsa and the others published several academic papers on their findings, and NASA got the insight it needed into the aquanauts' mental states throughout the experiment. The women were also given a ticker tape parade in Chicago and had a special lunch with First Lady Pat Nixon at the White House. As for Tektite, it hosted several more all-male missions through the 1970s until it was finally decommissioned. But NASA still uses underwater habitats to both train and study astronauts before they head into space. Above all else, Mission 650 proved that women were just as capable of men, if not more so, at being astronauts. The work of Alina Schmontz, Anne Hartline, Sylvia Earle Mead, Renata True, and Peggy Lucas Bond led to NASA eventually training women to go into space in 1974. These five women managed to do the impossible. They broke the glass ceiling while living in an underwater metal tube.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This episode is sponsored by Intuit. Here's a story for you. Once upon a time, a young woman was haunted by the ghosts of bad financial decisions, with credit card debt and an empty savings account looming over her every day. But when she tried to ignore these ghosts, they only grew bigger and scarier. And these ghosts of her bad financial decisions were stopping her from living her best life. So she decided to face them head on and take control of her finances with help from Intuit. Intuit helps you face your financial fears with confidence through products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Whether you're trying to manage your money or trying to run a business, Intuit gives you the confidence to take control of your finances so you can live your best life. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, Intuit.com. to start living yours. Let's get into it. Some people believe that if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself. For a woman named Mary Jane, though, it wasn't that she wanted things done right. It's that if she didn't do them herself, they wouldn't have gotten done at all. Mary was born in Brooklyn, New York in 1893. Her mother was a model, and her father had been a boxer before becoming a private investigator. She also had a brother and two sisters, one of whom died as an infant. Mary got the acting bug early after performing for her local church when she was only five. By the time she was a teenager, she was on the vaudeville circuit as a member of the Hal Clarendon Stock Company. In fact, Mary was an early drag star, performing under the name Jane Mast and playing the part of a male impersonator. She eventually worked her way up to Broadway in 1911, performing alongside big stars like Ed Wynn, perhaps best remembered as the voice of the Mad Hatter in Disney's Alice in Wonderland. But being on stage wasn't enough for Mary. She wanted more. She wanted to do it all. Write, direct, produce, all of the jobs that men were doing. And she knew that if she didn't take the initiative, she would never get the chance. So she got to work writing her own plays. Her first was a 1926 show, simply titled Sex. Mary had written the script, directed it, and produced it all on her own, and audiences loved it. But critics and the authorities did not. After several religious groups complained about the content of the show, Mary and the rest of the cast were arrested and brought up on morals charges. She spent 10 days locked up, refusing to pay the fine because she knew that her play could get a huge boost from the notoriety. And it did. Mary didn't do too badly in jail either. She only served 8 days, getting 2 days off for good behavior, and often ate her meals with the warden and his wife. She returned to the stage with a new show called The Drag, which cast gay actors that she had known from a club in Greenwich Village. Mary was a staunch supporter of gay rights and often butted heads with the New York City police, who persecuted gay men and brutalized them simply for existing. It's no surprise that after testing her show in New Jersey and Connecticut, she was blocked from bringing it to the Broadway stage. By the 1930s, Mary had found her way to Hollywood, where she became the talk of the town. But not only because of her acting. She hadn't just broken into the business. She had broken the mold. Mary wrote much of her own material, and although she went uncredited for the work that she did on her first few films, she received sole or partial credit for almost all of the movies that she made between 1933 and 1978. Her success allowed her to do many things that women of that era were not allowed to do or even expected to do. For example, she had a clause in her contract that gave her the right to kick her co-star, W.C. Fields, off the set if he ever showed up drunk, which was apparently not all that uncommon. She also allegedly opened a bank account for herself using a man's name. You see, until the 1960s, women were not allowed to have their own accounts in the United States. But perhaps most impressive of all was her willingness to stand up to hate, especially where her friends were concerned. Mary had a chauffeur and bodyguard named William Landon Jones, better known to boxing fans as Gorilla Jones. He was also her lover, and he was black. And that would have been scandalous enough in the 1930s, but Mary didn't exactly hide their relationship. One day, Jones arrived at the Ravenswood Apartments in Los Angeles where she lived. He approached the door, at which point he was told that he could not go up to see her. They had put a rule in place, banning people of color from entering the building. Mary found out and immediately made 2 phone calls. The first was to the front desk, telling them to allow him up to her room, and the other was to the owners of the apartment building. Rumor had it that Mary actually bought the Ravenswood and then changed the rules to allow Jones to come and go as he pleased. But the real story was only slightly less dramatic. You see, she found out that the owners were on the verge of losing the building due to lack of funds. They asked Mary for help, which she happily gave. She loaned them the money with the understanding that Mr. Jones could enter the building with no more problems. She then told Jones, "I was so disgusted with what happened to you, I bought the Ravenswood." In other words, she spread the rumor herself. Mary Jane was an iconoclast. She was an ally to a number of minority communities, and she was someone who did not tolerate hatred towards her friends or family. And that's why she's still revered to this day, but not as Mary Jane, but as May, her stage name, Mae West. I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show. And you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.